kind of personal, but how would you feel about kind of sharing your experience with Julie, like about that whole situation?
Sure.
Obviously, like, you don't have to like give the whole rundown or anything like that, but I don't know, it's such a wild story, and not a lot of people, I feel like, know someone that was murdered, right? And so it's just such a, it's such a crazy thought to think about. We used to know this person, and then someone ended up taking their life.
Yeah. So it is an interesting story. If any of y'all listeners out there were paying attention to the news or in 2010, or happened to come across the episode of Dr. Phil or 2020 or some podcast that covers it, there was a murder in 2010 of my friend from college, Julie Kibuishi. And her friend, or as far as I understand it, it was her boyfriend's friend, her boyfriend at the time's friend, Sam Hare. So when I actually found out that she was killed, I had just gotten a text from a mutual friend of ours just saying, oh, you know, Julie was killed. I just wanted you to know this and that.
How close of a friend was Julie to you? Because I met Julie through you.
I want to say 2006, 2007, we were best friends. Like, we were inseparable for a little while. We grew apart little by little, but we were still friends. We just weren't as close as we were.
Yeah. And I wasn't as close of a friend to her as you were. Mm-hmm. Every time I hung out with her, it was always like in a group with you.
Yeah.
And it was when I would visit you while you're going to college. I actually thought she went to the same university, but no, I think she just hung out there a lot.
Yeah, it's funny because she started coming on campus because a close friend of hers worked on campus, and that close friend eventually became a student. Mm-hmm. And then Julie would hang out with her and then come on campus. And then she started dating a guy on campus. So then she was coming on campus because of him. And then they broke up. And then she was coming on campus because of me. So she was just a pretty regular fixture.
Yeah. Something I remember fondly about her. She was such a sweet and kind person. She was very outgoing and she was cool with everyone.
She loved being social. And she was actually, her birthday was on Valentine's Day. And so she definitely had like, you know, the heart for it, I guess.
She was so goofy too. I remember at the time I was like super into Guitar Hero 2, right? So I would bring over my console with the freaking guitar peripheral. We introduced it to Julie and she was just so mesmerized by it. She was like, I gotta get this song, because she kept failing.
Yeah, and she wasn't that good at it.
Keep going and keep going until she finished the song. And it was just so fun to watch how into it she was.
She probably thought about it like dance, you know, like if you can't get a move right, you just keep practicing and practicing until you get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was great.
So you guys had kind of like drifted apart.
Well, I think, you know, it goes with her personality, but she also wore her heart on her sleeve. Every guy that she dated was like the one, you know, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And get so attached so quick. And I don't know if that was the case with this guy. I actually never met the boyfriend at the time, but he was in the military and he was actually deployed at the time that she was killed. But he had a friend and it ended up that they were at the same school. And so she would go to his apartment to study. And the murderer was a neighbor. I think he had heard somehow that the friend, Sam, he came into some money and he was getting married, and so he decided to kill Sam for the money. It wasn't a lot of money, it turns out, and so he was kind of, it was really dumb, obviously. So when I actually found out about the murder, Sam was the prime suspect, and there was a manhunt for him,
but no one could find him.
Well, Julie was found killed inside of his apartment, and I think the murderer had set it up so it looked like there was like some sort of like sexual assault or something like that, because he killed her, and I don't know if he killed her on the bed or threw her on the bed after he killed her, but I guess he like ripped her clothes and stuff to make it look like.
Right. There was a struggle.
Yeah, there was a struggle. It seemed like, as far as I've read, he just shot her because, and then with Sam, whether that was a quick murder or not, he did far worse to him because he ended up cutting him up and hiding
different
pieces in different places.
And this isn't a true crime podcast. I mean, it kind of feels like it right now, but basically, I guess to sum it up, the neighbor guy, he was also an actor, right? And so he was performing the same night that the murder happened.
Killed people, yeah.
He committed the murder, and then he went back, performed in the play, and then that was his alibi. I was like, no, everyone saw me, I was here. And apparently, some people even said there was like no sign of like distress or anything like that. Like he just acted normal.
Like he's a psychopath kind of situation.
Like he just switched it off, right?
Yeah.
And then afterwards he went back and then did the whole dismemberment, and he hid some of the pieces in the theater.
In the theater, like in the rafters or whatever. Oh, in the catwalk or whatever you call it. Yeah.
Yeah. They eventually tracked him down through that kid that was hired to pull the money out of the ATMs.
Yeah, I bet he felt so guilty, too, when he found out what he was a part of.
Yeah.
Poor kid.
Having someone go through all that just to rob you, it's crazy.
I know. People are nuts.
Yeah, I had seen the YouTube clip of the news report, and I had listened to the Crime Junkie episode, because Brenda, that's her favorite podcast, and so she was catching up from the beginning, and she ran into the Julie Kibuishi story.
Yeah.
But the thing is, everyone always only talks about the boyfriend. I just felt like there was no love or no attention shown for Julie. And I just kind of wanted to focus a little bit more on that aspect, you know, like who was Julie and who was she to us?
Mm.
And she was a great person through and through. She was a sweetheart.
She was. Her last Facebook picture, which is still up there, is a picture of her holding her nephew when he was a teeny little baby. The funny thing is, I think the middle brother, I guess, I think he might have had a kid and also named him Julian, or his middle name is Julian.
Oh, in memory of her?
Mm-hmm.
So is your son named after her?
Sort of, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I didn't want to explicitly say, like, oh, he's named after her, but I definitely had her in mind when I named him.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, I never knew that.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to shed some light on that and to, I don't know, just remember the positives, all the positivity that she brought into our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Those short few years.
She was pretty cool. And I'm sad that she's gone, of course. Yeah, I definitely wish she was still here.
We doing this?
Yeah.
How you doing, everybody? Welcome to Affliction Oz Podcast, spooky episode 30. My name is Eric, and the other voice occupying your head this time is a proud mother of three, lab geek, my sister and co-host, Stephanie.
Woo-woo!
Thank you to all the listeners out there for joining us. We're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. That also includes YouTube, where you can find us at Affliction Autos Podcast. Please give us a like and subscribe. New episodes drop on the first Saturday of each month, 5 a.m. Pacific. Oh, and I keep forgetting to mention that we also have merch. So you can find the link on our socials.
We've had merch for months.
Find the link on socials and or the descriptions of our episodes. Here on Affliction Oz Podcast, we mainly talk about films that range from mind-numbing to mind-blowing. We also cover TV shows and other forms of media. Of course, we will be getting into spoilers here, and there will be only the healthiest amount of expletives tossed in. You have been warned. If you ain't ready, then get ready, because for this October episode, we will be discussing the science fiction psychological horror film The Cell, released in 2000, directed by Tarsem Singh.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but when I first saw the trailer for this movie way back when...
You remember that?
I do, actually.
I don't even remember that.
I remember seeing the visuals for this movie, and I was like, what the fuck? It was just...
It's so good.
So dark and twisted. Vivid.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever seen a concept like this before.
Mm-mm.
Man, what was I, like, sixth grade or something like that? Seventh grade? And I was way too young to see this movie, but I remember thinking, like, man, I'm, like, morbidly curious about this thing.
Right.
There's just something intriguing about it.
Well, given a little history, which I think is interesting... Tarsem Singh, the director, he used to do music videos. He used to direct music videos. And then he went into, it looks like he did a Nike ad at some point. I'm looking at here. Then he did The Cell. And I've never actually seen any of his music videos, but it looks like the, like, he has a visual style kind of thing, right? Very vivid, very, very distinct, very cool. And 6 years later, he actually did this movie called The Fall, which is one of Andrew's favorite movies.
Wow.
And that movie, and it has similar, like, very, very visually, very unique, very imaginative, you know.
Very stylish.
Yeah. But it's a really good movie, and so I definitely recommend it. But also looks like some years after that, he did the Mirror Mirror, the Snow White retelling with Julia Roberts and Lily Collins, it looks like. That looks like,
okay, you like that one?
Yep, it's Lily Collins. I've never seen it, but now that I know it's by him, I was not interested. I think that was the same year that Snow White and the Huntsman came out too. And I saw that one. I saw that one, and I am not a Kristen Stewart fan, so I'm not into it.
Dang, okay.
But I was like, oh, like two Snow White movies in the same year. I wasn't that interested. So I saw one, didn't really like it, and I didn't even bother seeing the other one.
This is just kind of a weird cast that you wouldn't expect to see in a movie. Like Vince Vaughn and J-Lo in a movie? What right? the fuck? In a serious movie, too.
In a serious movie,
there's
yeah.
no humor in this movie at all.
And there's no rom-com in the movie.
Nope.
Like, you usually see J-Lo in some sort of rom-com, and you see Vince Vaughn in Wedding Crashers or whatever. But, you know, in The Cell, this very serious, no comedy whatsoever movie, there's not a single laugh in this movie.
I think in a way, I think that's what adds a little bit more to it. It was unexpected. I was going in thinking like, oh, this acting is probably going to be trash. I actually thought it was fantastic.
And then there's the, you know, the other cop, that one of the other cops is the brother-in-law from Breaking Bad.
Oh, that was before he was a hard ass.
Yeah. And then the main guy, the Carl, the murderer. Mm-hmm.
How do you say his name? Vincent D'Onofrio?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I would guess Vincent D'Onofrio. We're going to have to Google it. Okay, so as Carl Starger, and this guy, so he is, I guess he might be known for roles such as, if you're into the Marvel stuff, he's Kingpin in, what, Daredevil?
Check this out.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio. I was close. I said D'Onofrio.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh, did not know that's how you say it. All right.
I was close. I'm going to call that one a win. Oh, he was the cockroach alien in Men in Black.
Yeah, that's right. He was in Full Metal Jacket.
I haven't seen that one.
So yeah, Tarsem Singh. This is actually his directorial debut. Because like you said, he was directing like other things, right?
Yeah, he was doing music videos.
I do feel like The Cell flew under the radar. Like, I feel like no one knows what the hell this movie is. No one's ever heard of it. And when you try to explain it to them that, you know, you got J-Lo and Vince Vaughn, they'll be like, what the fuck? Are you serious? They think I'm joking.
Yeah. It's about going into the mind of a serial killer. J-Lo goes into the mind of a serial killer. And Vince Vaughn is there, too.
Doesn't crack a single joke. I feel like it was also a bit of a risk for Warner Brothers. Because, I don't know, it just didn't seem like it had that much hype behind it. And it seemed like it was getting mixed reviews. Obviously, you know, I just pulled it up and I think it's gotten like mediocre reviews.
Yeah. And I don't think you saw it in the theater. I don't think I saw it in the theater.
I was too young to go see it myself. And then I don't think Dad would have been interested because I don't think he's into darker movies like this.
Yeah. And so we saw it probably high school age, huh? Well, I was close to high school age at that time anyway. Yeah. So a couple years later we saw it and I don't know. I felt kind of blown away, you know, because it was so unique and so creative. The whole plot, the idea of going into the mind of a serial killer and dissecting all of that horror and, you know, all the disturbing stuff just hanging out in his head and how it all kind of settled into the way the inside of his head is, you know.
It does have a lot of elements, right? So it's like, it's kind of like a crime thriller. You know, like a little murder mystery thing going on. And then you have the science fiction element. And then you have like the dark fantasy almost, right?
Yeah.
It's got a lot going on.
I guess it starts off, well, he the basic gist of it is that he's a serial killer and he's killing these women, and he takes these women and then he puts them into a cell, and he gives them like food and water and a toilet and stuff, and you know, kind of gives them hope like that they might survive. And then eventually he starts filling up the cell with water little by little and drowns them little by little. But there, I mean, there's more to it. For example, let's just start at the beginning.
So yeah, we got J-Lo or Jennifer Lopez as Catherine Dean, Vince Vaughn as Agent Peter Novak.
I knew you were going to bring that.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
I thought you wrote it out phonetically or whatever.
I tried, but D'Onofrio. There we go. As Carl Starger. So the beginning of the movie, we have child psychologist Catherine. She's hired to conduct an experimental treatment for coma patients, what they call a neurological cartography and synaptic transfer system. It's a mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that does is, yeah, it just allows Catherine to enter the mind of the patient through some sort of advanced virtual reality technology, it seems like. And yeah, she can attempt to coax them into consciousness. This technology in and of itself was a really captivating element to the movie. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I wonder if it's possible. We haven't gotten that far. It's interesting because we've definitely advanced a lot with VR since then. But this would be taking it a step further because you're going into the brain, into somebody else's head, you know, rather than just seeing VR on a, you know, on a screen or something and some goggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like you're in it. You're immersed fully in their mind. In a way, yeah. You're kind of subject to the world that they build in their mind. You can kind of influence certain things, but not the whole entire thing.
Yeah, and they actually mentioned you have to be really careful because if you start thinking it's real in there, then you can get stuck. And then, you know, what happens to you in there could happen to your real body. I mean, to an extent. Obviously, if you get cut up or something, you're not going to get cut up in real life, but you might die in real life because your body thinks it's dying or your brain thinks
it's dying. It's kind of a medical procedure as well because you have to get some sort of like IV thing going on in the suit. You have to wear like this fully like haptic suit thing as well.
Yeah, and you know, when Vince Vaughn eventually ends up in it, he says it feels like pins and needles all over his body or something along those lines. And then the lady's like, oh, it gets worse.
Oh, shit. Yeah, even like the visual of like how you start off on those little blocks and then when they place that little, sheet over your face.
Yeah.
Those little beds just retreat into the ground and then you're just sitting there floating.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's kind of a cool visual.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if there's a purpose to it. Because it's not like you can move in the air or anything like that.
Like, why not just lay on a bed? Like, why do they need to be floating, I wonder?
Yeah. It would make sense if they were actually moving. Like, if they move, you know, inside. Like, if their actual body moves. Like, if they're walking, you know, their actual body's walking or something. But since they're not actually moving, it doesn't really make a difference, I think.
That also makes me wonder, like, I wonder if you could achieve something similar being in a tank yourself, you know, like a little water tank, being fully submerged with, like, oxygen. Because you know how you move slowly in water, and in the dreams, a lot of it is in slow motion anyway.
I wonder if that's kind of the premise of, you know, the precogs in the water in Minority Report. Or maybe that's supposed to be a connection thing between the three of them. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, so anyway, you had mentioned in your notes that this whole experiment is being funded by the parents of her one child patient. I guess she's having a little bit of trouble getting him to fully open up because he has, what, Moki Loc, the boogeyman?
Yeah, he has this weird, like, alter ego.
Kind of, yeah. So the parents want to cut the funds because they don't think she's getting anywhere with them. But she wants to reverse the feed, and she thinks she can make progress if she brings him into her head instead of, you know, her going into his head. Where the problem is to her that he has the control there, and because of that, Moki Loc has the control there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're saying it would be too jarring to have him go into her mind. Make things worse. I can imagine it's frustrating as well because as the viewer, you can see what progress she's making in the mind because we're there with her. what does that look like from the outside? It doesn't look like a damn thing. He's still comatose.
Yeah. And so they threaten to cut funds, but they're able to convince the parents to give her 6 more months. And she's, of course, like, you know, let me reverse the feed. And they're like, no. You know, and then we meet Carl Starger, who, kind of jumps straight to him dealing with one of his victims. And he basically has, I don't know, an obsession with dolls?
Seems like it. Yeah, he has an interest in dolls.
And water.
He has an interest in water. And basically, it's funny that the movie came out Barbie, because he essentially turns his victims into, like, life-size Barbies.
Yeah, so he drowns them and then fully bleaches their bodies and then suspends himself over the body like he's floating in water and then does his disgusting thing.
What did you think of all of that? Because this is a lot to take in. So it's like, one,
it is.
He already killed someone. Two, he's bleaching their body and, like, in a way, I guess, cleansing the sins or the evil or whatever, the filth off of it, right?
Well, and turning them into pale dolls.
And then, obviously, you can see, like, he's doing this in some dingy basement.
His basement.
You can see, well, I mean, we don't know that yet.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going off of, like, how the scenes are presented.
Yeah.
You see, like, a bunch of these weird figurines. Like, he's got,
all his little
bird skull and stuff like this.
He has some, Sid and Toy Story stuff going on, like a bird head on a doll body and, you know, things like that.
If they ever made like a serious like Sid like spinoff of Toy Story, this would have been it.
Right?
This would have been Sid.
That twisted kid.
And the thing is, he has like, when he takes his shirt off, he has all these rings and shit on his back and his arms.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, there's so many elements to...
So many disturbing, like it just gets more and more disturbing as it goes.
Exactly.
This dude is fucked up.
Even if you stopped halfway, it would have been disturbing enough. But then he turns on the TV and he's watching back the footage of them drowning.
Of them like crying for help and, you know, calling for their parents and stuff like that. And so he watches that footage.
He enjoys the helplessness that they're in.
And suspends himself and does his disgusting thing.
And I think it has to be all of those together. Like, I don't think for him, it would have been as pleasurable with some of those missing. So it's like, he has to look at the body that's bleached, fully naked, and then he has to be in pain. And you can see the skin stretching off of his back and it's bleeding.
Yeah.
And so it's the pain and like the corpse, and then hearing the screaming and pleading in the background, and he's watching the film. And then on top of that, he masturbates. So it's like, there's just like so much going on right here. It's crazy.
It's so specific. I mean, some people, you know, obviously some people have their kinks or whatever and have to have their specific scenarios and stuff, but this is a whole different, obviously this is, you know, he's killing somebody to do this. So it's way more disturbing. And then you also see that he has a dog,
mm-hmm.
and it's an albino dog on top of that. So he has this obsession with paleness.
Very rare.
And then he also has that horrible 70s serial killer haircut. So he has the whole package, right?
What is that? It's almost like a long bowl cut.
Right. And it was I feel like it was so popular at some point, but now I just kind of equate it with
creepiness.
Serial killers in general. Yeah, and creepiness.
Those glasses too. Like the ones that kind of have like the tint fade out towards the bottom.
Oh God, yeah. The giant frames and stuff. Yeah, and so he ends up dumping the body in a river with like no water in it off a bridge. And so they find the body and that's where you meet Vince Vaughn and stuff. But once they, you know, recover the body and investigate it and stuff, they bring up several good points. Like, you know, he's getting sloppier and sloppier when he dumps the bodies. It's like, he's wanting to be caught. And obviously they know it's the same guy because, I mean, it's just 2000. So they don't have as you know, good a technology, forensic technology, I guess, but you know, they're at least able to discern that everything about it is obviously that it's the same guy, because I think they found, what did they find on him? Is it the blood? Does he have blood dripping off of him and his semen on her? And they're like, it's the same.
I'm kind of questioning the sloppiness. Like it's definitely sloppy for sure. I don't know if it was entirely intentional, because Vince Vaughn did ask a good question. He said, is the water this low this time of year normally? And they're like, no, this is kind of the lowest it's ever been. So I wonder if he must have done it in the middle of the night. He did say that he kind of like made contact with the side of the bridge. And so there was like a transfer. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're able to match the tire tracks and everything.
Yeah, they said it was the same tire tracks.
I think he just assumed middle of the night, I can hear water. I'm just going to toss them and it will carry the body away. Mm. But it landed on, you know, just some dirt next to the water. So it seemed like it kind of worked out in the FBI's favor that the
I feel like that's sloppy too. That's to not make sure that there was enough water, but to also, if he missed the water, he would have heard that, you know?
Mm.
He definitely would have heard it if he got if he hit the water or if he missed it, but.
And I wonder if it, if he was in a rush to leave, like maybe someone was driving up, so he's like, oh shit, I gotta get out of here.
And then, you know, he used to kill somebody every few months or something like that. And now it's only been, what, 10 days or something? So he's getting more frequent too, or maybe he's getting more, I don't know. He's already found somebody and he's desperate to move on to the next one.
Yeah. Maybe he's getting more comfortable with it. Right. Like he's already done this enough. No one's found him. So I think in a lot of ways that's kind of human nature. Like you're greedy. If you were to steal something and you get away with it, then you're like, cool, maybe I can just do that again and again and again. And then eventually get caught. So it's like, you do get a little bit more reckless with it.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. So lucky for the FBI, they end up finding an albino dog hair on her body. And they're like, okay, how many albino dogs are there? We need to find record of any albino dogs that have been bought and sold. And guess where he ended up buying this dog?
Hmm.
I don't know if you remember hearing what they said, but they said that Starger bought his dog in Riverside in Woodcrest.
Yeah, it was in Woodcrest. Yeah, that's right.
And do you know where that is?
Yeah, it's actually on my way to your house.
It's basically on the other side of the closest main street to me. So I'm in Orange Crest and Woodcrest is just the next like kind of neighborhood over.
It actually makes sense because there's a lot of like more ranch style houses, like bigger lots and everything in Woodcrest. That's also kind of around the area that we got Harlow trained.
Oh.
They have this big lot and they train a lot of dogs to just like do the basics, right? Sit and walk and stuff like that. So it kind of makes sense that there are like breeders and trainers and stuff around there.
Mm-hmm. And people who would have the time and the money, obviously they're making money breeding, but you have to, you know, buy expensive dogs to breed them. So, you know, you had to spend some money before you can make that money.
Yeah. Oh, I did want to say about the, I just kind of wanted to talk about the torture system really quick.
Uh-huh.
So the water tank torture system, how you're saying he provides like the basic amenities, right? Just like a bed and toilet. He also gives them food, I think. He gives them like McDonald's or something from what it looked like.
He gives them food and water. It looks like they have a little stash of snacks,
But it's very meticulous, right? So like I don't even know how he gets them in there because there's no door or latch or anything.
I know it's sealed so that the water could fill the whole thing up.
I don't think they ever show how to properly put someone in there or take someone out.
I mean, they probably did that on purpose because they probably didn't even know.
Maybe not. Yeah, it's very meticulous, very intentional, but also
he probably has to put them in there and then seal them back in, like seal it back up once they're in there, you know?
Maybe.
That probably like has to open a panel, put them in, and then has some, you know, some like silicone caulk or something like that to seal whatever he opened.
The way that they would show it, it's always kind of like from the corner of the room. So that way you could see the little like desk setup he has and like the cameras pointing at the cell. It's very cold and dingy looking. And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of like a Saw trap long before the Saw franchise was ever a thing.
Right.
I was like, this feels like they woke up and it's like, you want to play a game?
No, thanks. Both of those situations suck. So moving on. So they're able to track him down based on the dog hair, which they're super excited about. And They track him down to his house. They have it surrounded and stuff like that.
Did we already talk about his next victim? Like what happened to her?
Oh, no, we didn't. Okay, so circling back a little bit. The way that he uses his dog. He watches her for a little while. Kind of stalks her from his car. And then when he finally decides to abduct her, it's interesting because she's so paranoid. Like, she goes into the structure, she looks around, and
she kind of does everything right.
Her pepper spray. Yeah, she does everything right. You know, she has her keys in her hand, she has her pepper spray in her hand, she has her finger on the trigger ready to go. She rushes to her car. There's she's nothing around over her shoulder. Car.
Yeah, making sure she's not being followed.
Making sure, and then she gets in her car and locks the door immediately, and starts everything it. Everything was done right. You know, everything's good. Everything's good. But then, as she's backing up, she hears.
Aw. And see, this was genius because I believe I would have fallen for this as well.
Right? You look in your rearview mirror, you see the dog on the ground.
Yeah, being a pet owner myself, I would have been like, oh shit, what the fuck? Where'd this dog come from? I would not have guessed that this was a ploy, you know?
And then you see, I mean, you know, the camera goes back there and you see the brick behind the wheel and the dog's just laying there. But well-trained dog, probably got trained in Woodcrest.
Maybe, yeah.
Just, you know, just lays there. And she's like, oh, baby, it's going to be okay, and this and that. And then he comes up behind her. And she puts up a fight. You know, they end up on the ground, like, wrestling, you know?
She's thrashing, yeah.
Yeah.
That reveal is crazy, though. Like, how she's checking on the dog, and then she glances over, and she sees that brick. And I think that was the giveaway, right?
Uh-huh. She's like, oh.
Because you're like, wait, what the? She never even came close to running over the dog. And then that's when Stargirl just, boom, pops up behind her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was wild because he's a big dude too.
Yeah,
and she was she was fighting.
Yeah, so when she wakes up, she's in the tank, the cage, the cell, whatever you want to call it. And at that time, you know, she's starting to experience some of that mental torture, and that's when the FBI are finding him. You know, they're coming to their conclusions. They're getting their evidence.
They tracked him down.
They're able to track him down.
They got him dead to rights.
They surround his house, and he has a seizure and ends up comatose on the kitchen floor with all his rings on display.
Good timing. It's very interesting, too, that he subdues those episodes by taking aspirin. Like, I thought he would have actually had medication or something for this.
I don't know. Is it aspirin? Is it actually aspirin?
Yeah. It's just like a generic, like, over-the-counter, like, aspirin bottle.
I feel like it would take something way stronger than that.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know, like, how that would help. All that does is just thins your blood, right?
Yeah. It's a painkiller, you know, and it prevents clotting. So, I don't know. Maybe it was a clotting thing. I seriously doubt it would work this way from what I know. Because I don't think... It's not like... If you already had clots in your brain, then I don't think aspirin would fix that. It would keep the clots from like forming to get to your brain in the first place.
Right.
But then again, if you had a clotting issue that serious, you would need stronger medicines than just aspirin. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, if you have regular epilepsy, you're already having to take medications for that. And so if you have some special form of epilepsy that was triggered by a baptism, then maybe it would take some more serious medication than aspirin, for sure.
I think we're kind of downplaying the baptism, though. It was done by his father, and I think his father was purposefully holding him down there, you know?
Yeah, I think so, too. But he did say that he had his first episode when he was under
during
there.
During that experience.
And yeah, I do think he was probably held under two.
It wasn't a standard.
No, baptism. It was definitely not. It seemed very... one of those crazy religions, like the televangelist kind of status religion, you know?
I was going to say, they looked Amish to me.
I don't know about that, but I definitely know a regular baptism, you just get held over a bowl and get some water like poured on your head. You don't need to get fully dunked in a natural body of water, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like I see more adults get fully submerged than children.
I guess that's some sort of... I mean, I've only experienced more modern baptisms, I guess. So, yeah, they take him in, and they have him, like, handcuffed to the gurney and stuff as if he's going to get up. But I guess they don't know at the time that he's not. Mm. And they have a, you know, the doctor that they trust examine him, and that doctor's like, he ain't getting up.
Yeah, this dude is gone. Like, he's basically a shell of his self.
Yeah.
That's very unfortunate because that means this leaves the FBI without any leads to the location of the current victim, Julia Hickson.
Yeah, and the only reason that they know that he has a current victim is because they report her missing. And apparently her abduction fits, you know, the details. Obviously, they don't know how she was abducted because she would have to tell them that. But certain details of her suspicious disappearance or whatever lead them to believe that, yeah, she is his next victim.
I think all signs kind of
they're right. I mean, it turns out that they're right, but I don't really think that
that's their hunch.
Just the fact that she's missing would be enough for them to be like, oh, yeah, it was Stargirl that, you know, she...
I mean, she's a cute white girl. Come on.
Pretty much.
Rally the troops. I guess
she just fits his usual victims.
We need to focus all of our resources on this specific search party. We need to find her at all costs.
Exactly. As if there aren't hundreds and thousands of other people out there missing. So anywho, that's where they decide, or the doctor thinks of, it's probably like, oh, a study I heard of kind of thing, you know? And they contact those people and rush them in, where Catherine is, you know, waiting to meet her destiny, I guess.
So now we have both protagonists finally meeting each other.
And they have a meeting, and they, you know, they give Catherine the choice. Do you think that this is something that you could do? Do you think that there is a chance that you could do this, that it would be successful? And she decides, yeah, I guess it's worth a shot.
I mean, it's kind of in the same vein of what she does, but...
Yeah, because his mind is very childlike. Not that she knows this yet, right.
But it's also, this is also very different from what she normally does, because she's working on someone like a child, right? Whereas, like, now she's working on a serial killer's mind. What the hell does that look like? She's about to find out.
Yeah, and it could go very, very wrong, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, she does end up finding out that, you know, there's definitely the childlike side of him that's still in there that never got a chance to really thrive.
She was a little hesitant to even go through with it, right? Because she was like, I like that's not really, you know, in my scope of like what I do. But I think they kind of force her into it. They kind of peer pressure after showing the footage of the previous victim, because they find the tape in the basement, right? Like his whole washing table and like the little chain lift.
And the dolls, the dolls. So they definitely know he's the guy.
They're like, come on, you have to at least try. Otherwise, this new girl that's missing is going to end up just like her. It's fully automated. He doesn't even need to be there.
Yeah, which is messed up. Who does that? Okay, so she decides to do it. And they hook them both up. And they happen to have a suit that will fit him perfectly. Because it seems like these suits have to be... They're probably custom made or something. I don't know how they make them that fast, but... With the way they fit, they're either really stretchy or custom made.
Maybe it's like those superhero suits, like how it just like contorts to whatever body shape you are, and it's just boom, perfect fit for whoever puts it on.
I think it's interesting that they kind of look like musculature.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's like a muscle suit.
Yeah, but it's just a suit.
Also, I wanted to mention that facility is pretty
high tech.
Yeah, like fancy looking. It's in Sweden, if I recall, and I think it's like an art exhibit.
In real life or in the movie?
In real life.
Oh, in real life, okay.
Oh, no, cool. I think it's in America. I think it's in California in the movie, because it doesn't take them very long to get to places around California.
That's very true, and obviously they mentioned places that we're familiar with, like Woodcrest.
I want to say that the facility that they're in is in San Diego. I thought I read that somewhere.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like Riverside's not that far. And then I think they go to Bakersfield.
Yeah, even. I think that's where the cell is, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, she goes in, and this is where it gets juicy.
Oh, yeah. The first time you actually get to see her, like, jack into someone's mind.
So she wakes up, I guess you can call it, in his mind. And it seems like a sewer or something.
It's a weird exhibit.
It's an exhibit of his past victims, but they're like alive, but they're not on display, alive.
But in a sadistic way.
Yeah, super sadistic.
And then what does she do? She just starts like tinkering dolls with shit.
Yeah, so she touches something and it wakes up the whole exhibit. Yeah. And, you know, all the little windows come down and she could see all the creepy, you know, doll-like victims.
They start performing for her in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
That's weird.
I was like, I don't know how you would... how you would describe that, but yeah, performing seems like the right word for it.
Right. Like, it's all mechanical, but like they also but seem alive at the same time. They're all kind of tied to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she also unleashes this like bodybuilder woman. that comes after her.
She looks like she's like 6 foot something and very, very muscular. She almost looks like she's like the right hand man for Stargirl.
His mind. Yeah.
Yeah. She's the problem solver.
Yeah. When I said super tall and really muscly, Andrew was like,
yeah, like, no.
But that's the only time you ever see her. So it's not like she's around. Like, it's not like she's guarding everything, you know. It's just, it seems like that one exhibit. Well, I mean, she does come and drop off J-Lo's body. And they're, you know, of course, before she goes in, they're talking to, what's his name? Novak. And they're explaining to him, oh, you know, it's dangerous because if she starts thinking things are real in there, then she could be trapped. And what happens to her in there could happen to her out here.
Yeah. Kind of. I, so the doctors that run the console and everything outside of the little room, obviously they're constantly monitoring both patients, you know, the patient and Catherine. And Novak, he's just asking questions because he doesn't quite understand how it works. And so they have to explain to him the rules of how this all works, you know, like how everything is in your mind, because it's all relative. So if you believe it to be real, then it is real. And then your body mm-hmm. starts thinking it's real. In a lot of ways, that's why I said jack in. Like, it's kind of similar to Matrix in a lot of ways, where if you die in the Matrix, then your body dies as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so that's it, right? Yeah, because she gets dumped in his kind of throne room, I guess. Mm-hmm. And there's many versions of Stargirl in his mind. There's, you know, the child version. There's a couple different monster kind of versions. And there's this kind of king version, right?
Right. This whole dark kingdom.
Yeah, and he has like his kind of cape thing attached to his back, but it's also around the whole room. And so when he stands up and moves, it detaches and starts flowing around the room.
Who the fuck comes up with these ideas? Like, this is off the wall shit, but I'm digging it, because it's just so unsettling.
It's visually, like you said, unsettling, but it's also, it's very creative, unique, you know, not something we've seen before. And who would mm-hmm. think of that, like to attach the cape to the back and it put it all the way around the room.
And why is that necessary?
It's really cool though. And so he comes down and it kind of flows like water. So he comes down the steps with his cape trailing behind him, and she first sees it kind of detached from the wall and start
flowing. Oh yeah, she's facing away from the throne.
Yeah, so she doesn't even realize, you know, what's going on, but you know, it looks cool or whatever.
She already looks on edge. She already looks on edge because she's getting ready to press that escape button.
Yeah, she has her thumb over it and everything ready to go, and he comes up right behind her, and then when she turns around, he's like, "Where do you come from?" Like in the trailer, right? And he has the black mouth, and it's super creepy.
I have a few things to say about this part of the movie right here. So first off, when you get to the whole exhibit, why did it feel like a Nine Inch Nails music video?
Probably because he's done a Nine Inch Nails music video.
Like grunge industrial music video.
I think that's the cool thing about his style, is that he probably developed that doing music videos. And so maybe he probably had a different budget, but he also had a very different time limit. And so everything that he did had to be really striking so that he can, you know, get whatever point he had across within, you know, 2 to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's got a full length feature film that he gets to do with all of his expertise. Yeah. And all of his creativity and, you know.
So secondly, do you feel like having this woman be tall and muscular added to the creepiness?
Yes.
I think you can see the size difference. Like J-Lo or Catherine, she's totally not paying attention. She's just analyzing these displays. And then when it pans past her, you see the figure like slowly creeping up on her. And I remember thinking like, oh fuck, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
There's no way J-Lo was taking her, you know?
Yeah, definitely not. And, you know, she's immediately overtaken by her.
Just like straight, like ragdolls her into the wall.
Yep. And knocks her right the F out.
And also with this part, where do you come from? That single-handedly, that scene right there was what made me want to see the movie. Like I was already interested, you know, I was kind of morbidly curious. But then when I saw that, I was just like, holy shit, what the fuck was that?
Right.
And the slow build, that's what's so awesome about it. Because, mm-hmm, yeah, you see mm-hmm. the cape separating and they're like retracting behind Catherine's field of view, but she still wants to see it. Like she's scared, but she still has to see what it is. Like, yeah, she's like,
she hasn't pressed the button yet.
Yeah, like she's like, I'm gonna hold out as long as I can. And then as soon as she sees that fool walk up, she's just like, get me the fuck out of here. Yeah. I'm done. Yeah. And I don't blame her, dude. I would have been like, oh hell no. Nope. I'm not going back.
Yeah, and she's like, I don't think I can do this. Yeah, she's like, this is beyond me. I don't think so.
I love the whole aesthetic of that. That may have been my favorite look for Stargirl, honestly, out of all of his interpretations or whatever. He has like this weird like carved cross thing in the front of his face. Like, I don't even know what the fuck that is. It's such a cool look though.
It is with the creepy black mouth and black eyes. Black eyes. Yeah, so Catherine's out and Novak he tells her a story about why he decided to quit being a lawyer and join the FBI, which is a sad story about a girl being murdered. Somehow that story convinces her to go back in.
Yeah, that's a wild story. Like, I guess just the gist of it, Peter Novak, he was a prosecuting attorney, right?
I believe so.
So he was trying to put these bad people away, but I guess, was there like a piece of evidence that they had to throw out?
So he had been molesting this little girl. And, you know, for stupid reasons, he ended up getting to walk. Mm-hmm. And I think he said like that night or something, her parents came home, the little girl, and found him sitting on the couch with her next to him, cut open, like all, you know, all the way down to the front of her.
Just chilling.
Yeah. And he said that, oh, he thought that they would want to keep her heart. So he put it in the freezer or something like that, sick, which is super messed up. And then he ended up not getting he didn't get too harsh of a sentence because they pled insanity, right?
Right, exactly. He kind of lost his faith in the justice system and he felt like...
Yeah, and he's like, I'm going to catch them instead.
He wanted to be more involved in that process and he wanted to be in a position where he could do more good. And he felt like being in the courtroom wasn't enough for him.
Yeah, so he's basically saying he's doing everything he can to catch these sick motherfuckers and... You know, he would very much appreciate it if she would also do everything she could.
Mm-hmm. You know what really convinced her? I think it was the part they kind of separate and then they later meet up when he sees Catherine sitting next to Edward, right? Her previous patient from the beginning of the movie. Because I think she's kind of convinced that Stargirl he's a lost cause. Like, you don't know what the fuck I saw. I saw some crazy shit in there. You know, he's gone. This is where Peter was saying that he truly believes that a kid can go through like the worst upbringing. They can go through hell and back and still not turn out to be a fucking killer. You know, like you can't just assume that they're all going to just turn out to be killers.
Yeah. And she's actually like, you really think so? And he's like, I know so. And I mean, not in those exact words, but basically that was the gist of it. And that to me made me feel like, oh, I think he might have had a really rough upbringing.
Oh, that's what he was
trying to imply.
Interesting. Okay.
Because she was like, are you sure? And he's like, I am absolutely certain, kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
Right. Interesting. I didn't catch that. That would be kind of a weird take on, or a weird twist, I should say, on his character, mm-hmm. where you see him as like this good guy, and he's really fighting for the good in the world. But mm-hmm. you don't really realize that maybe he himself personally went through some shit. Maybe he experienced some evil shit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's kind of what reminds Catherine that, like, you know, now that you mention it, I did see a little boy in there and I kind of saw some potential in him because there's that horse scene.
That was later though, right?
I think that's the first time she sees him, if I recall. And then he runs off.
I
thought that
too. And I was trying to remember how she gets to the exhibit thing. So what did the horse thing happen before she got to the exhibit?
I think she's going
through the sewer, right? And she goes down these stairs and there's like identical stairs on either side of this kind of huge chasm. And she sees him, the boy.
He's like running away from her.
And that's when she goes into the horse room. And so she's just like, oh, pretty horse, you know, like talking to the horse and stuff. Baby boy Carl, he ends up like pushing her away before the horse gets, you know, sectioned. Alive.
And the thing is, she doesn't expect it to happen because why the fuck would that be there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but this is the mind of a serial killer, so Yeah, and so she kind of, so he saved her, and I think that also got to her too, because he saved her in his mind, and he didn't have to.
It was very sad because he very much looked like a abused puppy. He doesn't trust anyone, and you know she's trying to be kind to him and get him to open up, and he doesn't. He won't like talk to her or interact with her, but he still felt compelled to save her from danger.
So there's a good boy in there somewhere.
Yeah, it does show that he kind of like lowered his wall a little bit.
Yeah, so she goes back in. She asks if he has any pets and stuff.
Ah,
And
that's
that's where
right.
they bring in the dog, that they bring in the they bring in the dog, and you know he's there licking his hand and stuff like
I
that.
wonder if it helped. Do you feel like it helped?
I think at least a little bit. So I don't think she was wrong on that, you know.
Because I think she was just trying different things out. She was like, who knows? It might this might be what gets him open up, just having the dog near him.
Yeah, so she goes back in. You mentioned how they make it seem like there were technical issues.
Man, I freaking loved how they did this. And I felt like there really wasn't any reason to do this, but this was such a cool little swerve on the audience, right? Jack him back in, she puts the suit back on.
And then like the power goes out.
Quit messing around, you guys, and they're like, sorry, Catherine, you're gonna have to like, you know, flip the breaker or whatever in there. And so she gets out, you know, she's like kind of like slowly detaching from the little bed and everything. She just slowly like waddles over to the other side of the room, and then she figures out that the scaling is a little off. She's as tall as like that little tray that was next to her.
Yeah, and then she turns around and sees herself still on it.
And she's like, I'm already in. And that's so cool because that tells me that she had never experienced that before. And I wonder why she almost had like this out of body experience this time around.
Just to throw everybody off, to throw
Dude,
her off.
everything in this dream world throws me off because now she's like contained in this little box, this little like glass box. And so she's right side up, but then when she escapes, she pushes up out of the hatch and then she's
And
upside
falls
down.
out,
So the
yeah. And then she falls
orientation
out,
gets thrown around.
which is very interesting.
I loved it. Such a roller coaster, like going through. I never knew what to expect.
She fall she what detaches the rope or whatever from her foot and falls into some water.
I think she just falls into air.
Well, yeah, she fall yeah, you're right, because she falls into
This dome thing.
like she falls into like a hole in the ground. But once she gets past that hole, it's as if she fell into some water, because she slows down and everything starts flowing around her. But there is no water.
This was such a cool effect as well, like visual effect. There's no water at all, but she's just slowly descending to the ground, and it looks like it, how you said she's in water. I don't know if you kind of like notice this throughout every time they're in the dream world, but a lot of it is in slow motion, and it's cool because they will alternate talking with their mouth, and it sounds kind of echoey, and then they will just transition to like almost talking telepathically.
Yeah, I did
Like they'll
notice
just
that
stop
too.
talking, but like you can still hear their thoughts. And it's so strange, but cool at the same time.
Yeah. So then she finally is that where she finally finds his house?
Now she follows him into the house and she gives him that little necklace mirror as like a little token
You
of
know, he's
friendship.
doing dishes. And she starts helping, and then she gives him the necklace, shows him how to use it, and then he accidentally drops a plate.
Oh shit. He done fucked up.
And he knows what's about to come, so he shoves her into a closet and basically gets treated to several scenes throughout his life of abuse by his father.
Yeah, it was almost like a montage, right? Like she gets transported to different periods of his
Different, yeah,
life.
different periods. You know, he's showing like an interest in dolls, and his dad beats him for that and irons him, and there, you know, a lot, several different kinds of abuse. And so Catherine's
Oh, yeah.
in the closet, you know, hiding, crying, standing in a bucket of eels for whatever reason.
Because why not?
Yeah. She sucks it up and just stands there and, you know, watches.
Yeah, she's trying to break out of the closet. In a lot of ways, too, it's similar to how when you're trying to scream to someone and like run to someone in a dream, but you can't, like you're just like being held back by some
Stuck.
invisible force. This was a lot to take in too because yeah, he's being physically abused, mentally, but there, it also shows some sexual abuse as well, where I don't know if that's like his dad's girlfriend or something, but he's
Yeah, I
like
think so.
basically he's kind of punishing him for looking at the body, but also forcing him to look.
Yeah.
So he's kind of beating this idea into his mind that, like, the woman's body is a form of punishment. You know, it's not something that you get pleasure from. So he, no wonder he's all fucked up mentally, because he doesn't really know what is, like, normal. This is kind of like his normal.
Yeah.
It's normal for him to fucking get his ass whooped, get his ribs broken from his father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything he knows is just the worst version of everything, pretty much.
Oh, another thing with the dolls. So he's just like, what are you doing playing with dolls? I wonder if they were implying that Stargirl may have been gay.
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
Because they don't ever really revisit that after the fact, but I think that that's just showing why he has this weird fascination with dolls as an adult.
Yeah, yeah. And I was wondering that too, is if, you know, if he had, you know, parents that loved him and nurtured him and stuff, maybe he would have been gay or not. Who knows? Obviously, his dad would not have allowed that. Yeah, so he ends up, she's still in the closet, but at some point, I guess she turns around and then she's in the bathroom where he's basically dealing with his first victim.
That's what I thought too, yeah.
This is my first one. Well, he said it. He was like, she was my first. And then he's like, I made such a mess cleaning her up and the tub's full of blood and stuff.
You know, since this is his first victim, he doesn't have a system down yet.
Yeah, exactly. But he manages to clean up after himself enough to get away with it. And also probably it was a long time ago.
And then, yeah, it shows his dog as a puppy.
Yeah, that was cute. But then while they're talking, I think it was like a demon version of him. And like his hair was
twisted.
Was in horns. Yeah.
You know what it looked like to me? It looked like a minotaur or like a faun.
Yeah, yeah. And so that sneaks up behind her, right? Knocks her down and she's kind of all disoriented. And they put the torture collar on her neck.
Man, I loved how they did this as well, because they have a physical representation of his control and influence over her mind with that collar.
Yeah.
Manifests it, right? He just looks up and like it just appears in his hands. As soon as he clamps it down, you see like the blood trickle out.
Yeah.
And after that, it switches over to the real world. The panel is like freaking out and they're like, what the heck? Basically saying that like the feed is like messing up.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, you know that worst case scenario that we talked about? Well, it's happening.
She's starting to, yeah, believe that this dark world is real and this is like where she belongs.
Yeah. And so Novak's like, I'm going in.
At first, that doctor was going to go.
Yeah, that's true. The doctor was going to go, but he was like, no, I need you here, the other doctor. But they did mention before, you know, kind of foreshadowing, like, oh, there's a third bed. Why is that? And they're like, oh, we experimented with group therapy, but it didn't really work out, right? Mm-hmm. So now is the time that they're going to use that third bed. And the doctor was going to go in, but, you know, she can't. And so Novak's like, I'm going in.
Yeah, no training at all.
Yeah, no training at all. Great idea. And they're basically like, just remember, nothing in there is real. Good luck.
And on top of that, just remember, you studied Catherine's file. You need to bring her back by
throwing something personal at her.
Yeah, you need to get her to remember something personal, something emotional, and that will snap her out of it.
Yeah. So this is where it gets kind of juicy, right? I love the visuals in this part too, because when Novak drops in, he wakes up in a puddle of water, first of all, to mention the water. And he is kind of next to, it kind of looks like a farm field or something, like rows of dirt, kind of.
Right, yeah.
And these three identical girls are sitting kind of staggered in these rows in the same position with their mouths open, kind of with their heads tipped back.
Very creepy.
And it's a creepy visual, but it's so effective. It's so effective. And then they start talking, and I think they're supposed to represent Carl's mom, because one, you know, one kind of wakes up and is like, have you seen my boy? Where's my boy? And then the second one wakes up and says, oh, dang, I don't even remember what they say. But, you know, they say stuff that make me feel like it's about Carl as a kid, you know?
Yeah, this is kind of cool because, well, yeah, I mean, on top of the fact that they're like whispering and then they like snap back to like their static position.
Yeah.
Right, with their mouth open. And even Peter's like, what the fuck? But I read somewhere that this is based off of a painting that the director saw. So this is based off of a painting by a Norwegian artist, Odd Nerdrum, titled Dawn. And I can pull it up right now.
Wow. Okay, you're going to show me.
So check this out. And you'll see the influence here.
Oh my God.
Like spot on, right?
Yeah, that's creepy.
They're like sitting on the ground with their legs spread. Oh, no, actually, it looks like it's just straight
they're
out.
They're just straight out.
Head tilted back.
Yeah, I could definitely see it, but because in the, yeah, and you can see actually, so if you look down, you know, two down below the one you just clicked is the scene from.
Oh, yeah.
That's the scene from the movie.
Wild, right?
Yeah.
With the eyes closed and mouth open.
Weird. Why? So then he goes and, you know, he gets up and starts walking and then finds the room where Catherine is sitting, and she's all decked out now in, you know, Stargirl's, the King Stargirl's world, like his dark fantasy world. So she's decked out in that kind of a dress with her hair and the makeup and stuff. Collar. She has this weird mask thing on her face made of metal.
What did you think of this whole setup and look for J-Lo?
I liked it in a kind of like gothic dark way, you know?
Same.
I thought this was such
a cool look for her.
Yeah. But with the dark lipstick and it's great.
Weird face decoration thing.
Yeah. Man, if I were a cosplayer, I would want to cosplay that.
You know what it reminded me of?
Huh.
So this, straight up, it gave me like little hints of enslaved Leia from Star Wars.
Yeah, a little bit. And she's chained to that bed too, I think. And so, you know, he's trying to snap her out of it, like trying to talk to her. And she's just, you know, being weird and dark and creepy and like kisses him and stuff like that. And
in this world, this is what her role would be, right? Is like she's almost like a concubine of sorts, right? Almost like a dark modern interpretation of a geisha.
Yeah, that's true. Like, huh?
She's just there for pleasure.
I can see that. Uh-huh.
To be eye candy.
And so the weird thing is that there's like a creepy jester kind of version of Stargirl, and he has like really little teeth and it's kind of like, hey, you know.
He's really giddy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's giddy. Thank you. And so he comes up from behind and grabs Novak and then like straps him to a table.
Wraps that little bag over his head and kind of, I guess, like knocks him out.
Yeah. And so when he comes to, he's, you know, tied to a table. A
little torture table.
Torture table. And the creepy jester guy cuts a hole into his stomach with some scissors and pulls out his small intestine and starts wrapping it. Winding it on this kind of pole above him.
Even has a little jingle to it too, doesn't it?
I know. And he's kind of just laughing about it the whole time. And then Novak is screaming, which can't hear him. It's quiet. But then he starts yelling stuff at Catherine, like, you need to wake the fuck up and stuff, you know. And starts yelling at her the story about how her baby brother died.
How the fuck was he able to do this? I have no idea. It takes some mental fortitude.
Seriously. And he kept saying, like, this isn't real, you know? And the jester guy was like, this isn't real, like, mocking him.
It's cool because since it's his mind, he's the only one that you can kind of hear clearly. And then he's muted everyone else until his words start piercing through and finally start reaching her from across the room. Because she's just sitting there idly.
She's just sitting there, smiling. And then her smile slowly fades as he's talking about her brother.
And what was the story with her brother?
He was killed in a car accident, I believe it was. I'm trying to remember if there's anything else to it. I guess I'd have to like look it up. But obviously I kind of cut that part out because it was sad out of my brain because there was a child dying, right? Mm-hmm. So she gets up and you know, slowly starts walking towards Jester Stargirl, and she grabs one of his torture tools from his table, which kind of looks like double-sided stake. Mm-hmm. And then she stakes him in the back.
His reaction to it, interesting.
He screams.
He pauses for a second and he looks down and he sees a stick in from the front. He almost has like this bird screech thing that he does.
Oh yeah, it was creepy. It was pretty horrible actually. And so then it cuts to Catherine is back to her normal look. With her, you know, her normal hair, her normal clothes and stuff. And they walk into this room together. And boy Stargirl is there, right? And she hugs him. And he has the wound on his back from where she stabbed him.
Wild.
Yeah. Because they're all just different versions of him. And so that kind of foreshadows, like, what she does to one Stargirl happens to all the Stargirls, right?
Right. It's cool because it shows where their priorities lie. So Catherine is more focused on the child Stargirl. Peter, now that he realizes that his intestines weren't getting ripped out of his stomach, now he's starting to, like, refocus back on
the case. Yeah. So this it starts splitting here. So you see, so he sees the tank and there is a girl in it, and it seems like a kind of creepy representation of the current victim that they're looking for.
This girl that's in this tank in his dream almost looks happy to be there.
Yeah. But all around this tank, all over this tank, is this symbol, and it's the same symbol that is on pretty much all of Stargirl's weird equipment. Mm-hmm. Like his washing table and his chain rig suspension system thing, and probably I think his water tank. And so that symbol is just all over the tank in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically like, okay, we got this. We gotta go. And Catherine's like, no, I need to help him.
I can't leave him.
Like, no, we gotta go. Yeah. And so he ends up pressing her escape button on her hand. And, you know, they come out and he's all coughing and stuff and, like, grabbing at his belly. And he's like, you know, is she okay? And they're like, yeah, she's okay. And so he's like, we gotta go. Like, I we need a helicopter, and I'm leaving right now. So, like, they kind of split, right?
Well, how creepy was it before they eject? The evil dominant side comes out of the corner of the room. You know, he catches up because they can never escape him for very long. Like, yeah. They only have a few minutes before he finds them and shows up. And so he's, like, standing on his hands. And then he slowly, like, almost does, like, the scorpion thing. And he, like, touches his feet on the ground and, like, snaps into an upright position.
I thought that was the Jester guy, the Jester version that does his intestines.
I think he's just in, like, that puffy suit, and that's when he just trots up and, like, scoops the kid and, like, sucks him into the shadows.
Uh-huh.
And I just loved how they did that, because that's not how Catherine wanted to leave the boy, you know? She's like, no, I gotta go after him.
I promise I'll come back, you know? I promise I'll come for you. And so, yeah, like I said, it splits off here because Novak's got his lead to follow, and he ends up being pretty spot on because he's like, you know, find this company and find out everybody that they've sold their equipment to. So they discover that the company had a facility in Bakersfield. Mm-hmm. And when they shut it down, they hired Stargirl to clean it out. And it turns out he just kept it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess over time, the property was just forgotten about, and which Stargirl understood, right? So he kind of just turned it into his own lair.
Yeah. And so they're rushing there. And at the same time, this was a little far-fetched to me, I guess, because this crazy facility, this high-tech facility, and Catherine's just like, I'm just going to change the code to the door. Bloop, 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 bloop. And then she goes in.
Yeah, I thought this part of the movie was the weakest, in my opinion, as well. So there's that. There's the fact that she, like, overrides and, like, she knows how to, like, operate the computer when all she is the one that gets jacked in. Like, she's never set it up before.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, on the other side, I felt like this was, I don't know, it almost seemed like him going into the mind to get information, or both of them going into the mind to get information, was kind of unnecessary, because that symbol was in the basement. You see it. That's like one of the first things you see when the cops show up in the house and, you know, they discover the basement. You see that symbol on the table, and you figured that they would have investigated that somehow,
right?
Like, looked into that. This felt like very lazy detective work going on here.
I know. Cause it wasn't until he was like, oh, find a placard or whatever, you know, on the table, you know, what does it say?
And it's clearly right there in the middle, and it says Carver on it.
Uh-huh. So, you know, the cops are rushing off to find this facility in Bakersfield, and Catherine jacks herself back into, and she reverses the feet.
On her own. She knows how to do all, yeah. She just starts flipping knobs and shit.
Yeah. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. they're locked out of everything for however she managed to do that within 3 seconds.
So you're telling me they can't just say like, all right, well, we're just gonna fucking hit shutdown on this whole system and sorry, now you can't go in.
Yeah, like they didn't have a kill switch or something.
Yeah,
like an emergency stop. Every instrument has an emergency stop, just saying. So while, you know, when she's about to go back in, she looks at his file, or I think, and she sees a couple of images that she decides to use. And one of those is the nun figure on a card.
She's building out her world right now.
Yeah. And then, you know, she's just like a nun figure just standing there still. And a Starger comes in. And it's, you know, beautiful. There's trees. And it actually kind of looks like a play set, to be honest, to me.
Well, she saw a snow globe. And so she just
uses the snow globe
as the setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, so yeah, that's right. So they're in the snow globe. So she sees the card. She sees the snow globe. And then she goes in. And he comes in. And, you know, it's beautiful and stuff. And he goes up to her. And he's like, oh, can I stay here? And she's like, no, honey, it doesn't work that way. But, you know, she wants to help him. She's like, I promised I would come back for you. You know,
she's turned the tables, if you will.
Mm-hmm. She's, you know, she's talking to him and they're having a conversation and all's well. But then King Starger, the room gets all dark and King Starger
is never too far from the child.
Yep. And he comes out of the pond, the pool of water that's in there. His cape kind of forms. And then he steps up out of the water.
So crazy. I freaking love that.
Which is a cool visual. It's a really cool visual, yeah. I forgot to mention that Child Starger tells the story about how he mercy killed a bird because he knew that his dad was going to do something horrible to it.
Well, so it wasn't even the child. I think this is when she finally gets that breakthrough, as I think what therapists always look for. I think it's represented by the fact that now the innocent side of Starger is an adult and he's able to explain it as the adult. The innocent side is always the one that it's easy to feel sympathetic towards, but I think the adult side is a little bit less sympathetic and you kind of think of him as the monster, but even him as the adult, you see that there is this innocent side to him. He's not a complete monster inside.
Yeah, so he tells this story and is basically implying the same for himself. Like he's saying, "Yeah, can't you save me like that? Because this dark side is always going to be there following me, no matter what."
This was sad, right? Like, how sad is that? Your inner self that's buried deep down. It's suppressed by this dark side, and it's just calling out for help. It's pleading, like, put me out of my misery, please. You're the only one that can do it.
No hope for me.
Even he himself sees how he looks to other people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like that part is always going to be there, unfortunately. And so the only way to get rid of him is to get rid of me as well.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I can't do that. But then the king version comes.
And like how they set it up, he's just like, it doesn't matter. He's already found me.
Yeah. But she's like, this is my world, so it's my rules. And she goes all ninja on him and kicks his ass.
I felt like it was a little unnecessary to rip off the nipples, though.
Right?
The little nipple armor.
That was just
armor.
For a cool visual, I guess.
Yeah.
You get that nice... Someone got to have fun with that special effects.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because she already had him pinned down. She shot him in the foot, and she like shoots him in like the almost like a grounded crucifix formation.
But the only thing that sucks about that is that when she looks back and sees Child Starger all beat up and stuff, that means his nipples are also ripped off.
They should have like had little like blood marks right here on his shirt.
I think they had blood all over him. she shot him with crossbow bolts and stuff. Oof. Right?
So when she was punching the evil Starger, she was basically punching the kid as well.
Yep. Poor thing. More abuse.
I think the young Starger, the innocent side, was getting relief from it because that was something that he was never able to do. He was never able to overcome that demon inside of him. And so
I could see that.
I think he was kind of getting a sense that like, this is getting close to the end. Like I'm finally about to be set free.
And so, so she, you know, she looks back and, you know, she realizes what he was saying, that he'll never be able to escape. And he is kind of just like, you know, save me. And so she turns back into the nun. And at the same time, Novak, it finds the location, but he can't find the entrance to, he doesn't even know what he's looking for. He doesn't know if it's inside one of these buildings or or what.
That was cool. I liked that they added this little bit of extra stress at the very end.
Yeah, and thankfully Julia, the victim, she's a bit resourceful, and at some point too, she's like freaking out and stuff. You know, she kind of stops herself and she's like, "Julia, get yourself out of this," kind of thing. You know, so she starts looking for, you know, weak points in the cell and stuff like that, and then she eventually finds the pipe.
She didn't accept her fate, which saved her, honestly, because even though Peter Novak got there on time, he was having trouble finding the entrance. And so she needed to at least buy herself a couple extra minutes so that way Peter can like get to her. Had she not done that, she would have been dead.
She would have been dead. But also in doing that, he was able to find her, because when she finally got that pipe disconnected and started breathing through it, there was a little like flap in, you know, whatever was above ground that came up, and that's what caught his attention. And so he sees that and starts kind of following it in the ground and finds the hatch in the ground.
So it looked like it was some sort of like exhaust for that system.
Yeah, I guess,
that
he had. Yeah.
Probably breathing in exhaust, but whatever the fuck.
Whatever, it's better than water. And so, but thanks to that, you know, he was able to, you know, she bought herself a few minutes, and it signaled to him, you know, gave him some sort of signal on where to look.
Right.
And so he found the hatch and he goes in, he sees her, he, you know, signals to her, like, get back, you know, get back, get back. And he shoots at the glass.
Mm-hmm. Pops a cap.
Yeah. And then, you know, takes a chair, or camera, or tripod or whatever, and starts smashing at it.
I think it was like a pipe that he just found in the corner.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then at the same time, Catherine, Mother Catherine, is saving the child Starger. She goes into the pond that she had, that King Starger came out of.
Yeah.
And she, you know, does what he asks.
Yeah, he doesn't even thrash or anything. He's just...
No.
He's at peace.
Yeah.
And it comes full circle, because he has to be killed in a way that this dark side was born in the first place, in the water, being submerged.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know... Novak is saving this girl from a horrible watery fate herself.
Yeah.
So then, you know, she comes out of the thing and she looks over at Starger and realizes he's dead.
Dust yourself off. You dead.
Yeah.
Finally kills the evil King Starger, but also it's at the expense of the innocent side as well.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
They're still kind of taking apart the house, right? Like,
investigating the house, yeah.
Sorting through all the evidence in there and whatnot.
Those lazy detectives that couldn't see that there was a clear sigil and like a Carver logo everywhere.
But Catherine has decided to keep Starger's dog. And yeah. I don't know. I'm sure that's some sort of symbolic thing.
It seems to me that she's not gonna like try to shy away from that experience. Like, it was traumatic, but I think she learned a lot from it.
Yeah.
And she grew a lot with it, and she's almost going to use this as her strength going forward.
Yeah. So now at least he gets a good home, and he can be a forever reminder of that trauma.
Yeah. And Peter, he mentioned something kind of interesting where he says that the FBI is choosing not to disclose the use of this experimental technology.
Right.
So it's almost like Catherine's leaning into it and the FBI is like trying to distance themselves from it.
Yeah, because people probably wouldn't accept that as an explanation. And so they're just calling it like a means to an end kind of thing, that in the end they discovered the hiding place based on good old fashioned detective work.
They should have been able to do from without ever going into the mind. I still feel strongly about that, but with this batch of detectives, I don't know. That's questionable. But a major thing came out of this that was important was that Catherine now feels much more comfortable reversing the feed, and she wants to try that with Edward now.
And that she does.
And how you explained before, she creates a similar mindscape, but she's the one in control now.
Mm-hmm. And he is able to accept that, and you see him actually come out and start walking towards her, and that's how the movie ends.
I wonder if she's going to beat the shit out of Maki Locke. What do you think?
No, because it's him. He's not an adult with a child side. That's an actual child.
That is a wrap on the cell. If you made it to the end of our podcast, then you are now trapped in a water tank with no escape.
Dude, at least for a messed up movie, you have to have a good reward at the end, okay?
Happy ending. Any final thoughts or closing comments?
I guess it's always been one of my favorites. It's a classic to me.
Favorite? Wow, well, okay.
One of them, yeah. I think
I knew you were interested in it.
Yeah, I know. I think when people used to ask me, you know, like, what's your favorite movie, that used to be on the list. I don't think it's, like, the favorite or anything, you know, but it used to be up there.
I was just surprised how little I was bothered by the casting of J-Lo and Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, I guess it's a good thing, though, right?
Like, I was pleasantly surprised. And as I was saying before, I thought this movie definitely flew under the radar. I think a lot of people just look the other way anytime like this movie's mentioned. I think I actually forgot to mention this earlier, but this is on Roger Ebert's top 10 films of 2000.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. So he gave it high remarks.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Somebody appreciated it. We know what I thought was interesting was that I actually found it more disturbing this time around.
Oh, okay.
I kept having thoughts like, you know, I think this isn't really stuff that I thought about back then, but now watching it, I'm like, people like this exist in the real world, you know? Mm-hmm. Stuff like this, maybe not to this extent. I don't know if people have elaborate, you know, torture tanks or something. Maybe they do. But, you know, people like this are out there.
People are probably doing something similar, yeah. You know what I was telling Brenda when I was watching this, which is kind of funny because she's studying therapy and psychology and stuff like that. I was telling her that this movie is about therapist.
Yeah.
Like, straight up.
Yeah.
I was just so mesmerized with this movie. The visuals, amazing. I was enthralled. You know, the sick and demented visuals all throughout this movie.
Yeah, I was just saying that in high school when I first saw the movie, I guess I was more innocent. I was more blind to the horrors of the real world, you know. And now I know a little bit more. This one pooped. I might have to go.
All right, I'll go ahead and close out. Affliction Knowledge is available wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop on the first Saturday of each month, 5 a.m. Pacific. If you enjoy our content, give us a like, a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe and check out our merch. Thank you to the listeners out there for joining Stephanie and I. This has been Afflictionados Podcast Episode 30, The Cell, and we'll see you all next time.
All right.